Welcome to the Pulse That Moves the Triangle World Today. This one-size-fits-all broadcast is a vibrant collection of stories, medical breakthroughs, helpful tips, what's trending, events, and boundless other adventures. It's a conversation pit of comedians, politicians, authors, chefs, sports figures, experts, the common and the uncommon. Here's the host of Triangle 411, Mary Innsbrucker.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the What the Heck Do You Do show. Like, what the heck does the North Carolina Secretary of State do? According to their website, they register trademarks, service marks, inform the business community about all state licensing and regulatory requirements, and register legislative lobbyists. Did you know that? So why am I on a What the Heck Do You Do recognizance? Well, during this election season, it's important to put the right person in the right job because your vote is about much more than Democrat or Republican. How did I come to this realization? Well, I happened to recently run into Beth Wood, the North Carolina State Auditor. I never met her before, but when we got to talking, she said something very interesting, and that was that her office does not make policy. Wow, a light bulb went off. If the office does not make policy per se, then this is not a definitive Democrat versus Republican stance that you're looking at. So again, it is more important about choosing the correct candidate for the position who has qualifications for the job. Beth Wood is here today, and I'm going to ask you, Beth, what are the right qualifications for the job of North Carolina State Auditor? Because I understand candidates do not even need to be a CPA or have previous auditing experience.
Mary, you're exactly right. You don't have to have any previous experience or you don't have to be a CPA, but to run this agency, like the citizens of North Carolina expect it to be, you not only need to be a CPA, but you need to have experience in the audits that the state auditor's office does. We perform many types of audits. There's standards by which our work has to be done. The auditor needs to be not a politician, but independent and objective. And again, you just have to have someone that understands all this to be sitting in this seat. Someone that understands the different types of audits, somebody that understands internal controls, somebody that understands wasteful spending and can go at it and have the right approach for the different audits that are done. And so to be in this seat, they should be a CPA. They should have the experience in governmental auditing and accounting. They should have experience and an understanding of audit standards for governmental audits. Governmental accounting is a very specific and special part of our industry. And so you could even be a CPA and be a great tax CPA, but not understand governmental auditing and accounting and the standards by which the job needs to be done. Additionally, you need to understand efficient and effective and what that means. You need to understand state government and how it works. So again, being something more than just a politician is required for this job.
Exactly. It's not about party affiliation. I often think, you know, I wish that candidates would present a resume just like any job applicant, and then voters could refer to that instead of party affiliation for who would be the best person for the job. But let's talk about your job, overseeing $46 billion taxpayer dollars annually. And tell us, what the heck do you do, starting with financial statement audits?
Well, I would like to make a point too, Mary, about what you just said. It is $46 billion taxpayer dollars coming in the door with things that you and your listeners can relate to. $13 billion in state income taxes that many people, a lot of people in North Carolina pay. $8 billion in sales tax, $2 billion in gasoline tax, $1 billion in corporate tax. And so these monies come into North Carolina, and they're distributed across state agencies and universities and community colleges. With financial statement audits, it's a very different type of audit and one that is really misunderstood, and that is these different organizations, whether it's the state of North Carolina, whether it's an individual state agency, whether it's a community college or university, hand us a set of financial statements. We look at the different line items on those financial statements, and we render an opinion on whether or not the information and the number in that line item is significantly stated. This information is used for creditors when local government, the state of North Carolina or universities go out and sell bonds. This information is used for contributors in the university system, for our General Assembly to understand that the numbers and in the individual line items they are sitting in on the financial statements, that those numbers can be relied upon when trying to make decisions about the financial health of those organizations. So many people believe in a financial statement audit that we have checked for embezzlement, for fraud, that we've checked for people that cheated on their timesheet. That is not true. This is simply an opinion on whether or not the financial statements for that organization are fairly stated. This is where the vast majority of my staff spends their time.
What about compliance audits?
In a compliance audit, the state of North Carolina receives $21 billion in federal grant money. These are simply our federal tax dollars, federal income taxes, federal taxes that we pay to Washington, D.C., comes back to the state of North Carolina in the form of grants, Medicaid, food stamps, grant money for clean water and air, grant monies to build our highways and bridges, grant monies for kids to go to school, student financial aid for kids to go to college. And this is all about compliance. When we sent this money to the state of North Carolina, we expected this $21 billion to be used for only the intended purpose, and was it? And with these grants come many, many requirements of how the money is supposed to be used. So the state auditor's office audits $21 billion. It's a compliance audit, as you stated. And what we're looking for is not are the numbers that were reported right, but we're looking at how these monies were supposed to be used according to the federal government. And then did the state of North Carolina spend those monies in accordance with the requirements from the federal government? If they did not, and we find many cases when they weren't, the state of North Carolina is susceptible. Our consequences are we have to reimburse the federal government for the billions of dollars they gave us. So in essence, Mary, we could have spent the billions of dollars. The feds find out through my audit that we didn't spend it appropriately and in compliance with the law, then the state of North Carolina is at risk for having to reimburse, after we've already spent the money, back to the federal government.
Whoa. Talk about impact. Oh, my goodness. I'm hoping you're on top of that, Beth, because we don't want to pay back money, that's for sure. Now, investigations. Now, these aren't audit, but required by statute to look into alleged illegal spending of state and federal dollars. What the heck do you do with that?
So the state statutes requires that the state of North Carolina have a means for people who believe state money, your tax dollars, or federal dollars, that federal grant monies that are run through the state of North Carolina and spent through the state of North Carolina, again, your tax dollars, they require us to have a means, and in this case, it's a hotline and an email address that we advertise often and in many places, but a place for people to report illegal spending, abusive spending, improper spending of state money or federal money that passes through the state of North Carolina. You're right. These are not audits that we do. These are allegations, and we send investigators to look into the allegations. It just happens to be a much more narrow scope, if you will, than an audit. And then we determine if the monies were misspent, they were embezzled, illegally spent, misappropriated, or abusively spent, we determine those and then we report. It's a public report. State Auditor's Office is not in the, doesn't have the capacity to call it illegal spending, but we certainly know if a law has been violated. We report that we believe this to be a violation of a particular statute, and then we report and refer that information to the higher legal authorities, if you will. And we do this very often. Depending on what it is, we may refer these findings to the FBI or the SBI or the district attorney, or if it's somebody that's received benefits and they didn't report it on their 1099 or their W-2, we'll refer it to the IRS and the Department of Revenue of North Carolina.
Okay, so that's something else to be on top of. And then this one too, discretionary performance, looking for ways. Like, for example, the audit of the 133 online classes that DPI developed and teach online, but yet the classes do not meet NC educational standards. I think this is costing like $18 million a year.
You're exactly right, and you're right on target, Mary. The performance audits, I believe, are where most taxpayers are the most concerned, and that is, I sent all these tax dollars into Raleigh, $46 billion with a B. Now, the numbers come out right when you do the financial statement audit, and they're on the right line. And it was spent on the things that were supposed to be spent, like the compliance audit would show. But did you waste my tax dollars? Did you accomplish the objectives that you meant to accomplish with my tax dollars in the most efficient way and the most effective way? So the performance audits really nail down wasteful spending or a program that is meant to serve many, many North Carolina citizens, but don't. And the DPI audit is a prime example. Department of Public Instruction spends $18 million a year to develop and teach 133 online classes meant to reach students in middle schools and high schools all across this state, to reach students that cannot get these classes in their own middle school or high school. And Department of Public Instruction has required North Carolina education standards that they must meet. It doesn't matter if the class is taught in the classroom or if it's taught online. And what we found is that the a vast majority of these online classes, 133, do not meet content standards, meaning the courses don't contain the content they're required to have. Plus, a lot of them, most of them, they're not challenging enough. They don't have the level of rigor they're supposed to in the class. And therefore, our students are at risk for not receiving online classes that are meeting North Carolina education standards.
Well, it goes on and on, the responsibilities of the position of state auditor. And I thank you for telling us about some of them, certainly just the tip of the iceberg, but just to give our listeners a little idea. So you think hard before you vote, look at the job, not the party per se. And to close, in 1 minute or less, and without any judgment of the other candidate, what makes you, Beth Wood, the right person to be North Carolina State Auditor?
Well, I'm a CPA. I have 20-plus years in governmental auditing and accounting. I have taught CPAs across the nation how to audit a governmental unit. I have 10 years of experience in the State Auditor's Office for seeing this agency from the inside out. I have started at the very bottom position and worked my way to the top, so I understand what this agency is supposed to do. I have audited cities and counties, the city of New Bern, Craven County, the city of Kinston, Carteret County. So I've actually done the work that my staff has done. So not only I've done the work they do, but I've taught them how to do it, and I've taught other CPAs how to do it. And there's never been another state auditor with those qualifications and experience and skills.
Wow, there's kind of the resume I was talking about. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for the opportunity.
So what about the North Carolina State Treasurer? What the heck does he do? Well, the Department of State Treasurer oversees the retirement systems, state health plan, unclaimed property, state and local government finance, and investment management. Here to provide more on the scope of these responsibilities is our current state treasurer, Dale Falwell, who is running for re-election this year. Welcome, Dale.
Well, Mary, thank you for having me. And I know that you previously had the state auditor on the line, and this is a very important function that you're bringing to your listeners. And I've tried to get as prepared as you do in your podcast.
I'm sure it's going to be great. So let's start with the Retirement Systems Division, which provides retirement benefits and savings for close to 1 million North Carolinian teachers, state employees, firefighters, police officers, etc. What the heck do you do?
Well, ultimately, we're in the check delivery business for those that teach, protect, or otherwise serve. All the other things that we do in the treasurer's office to present those checks is very interesting, but the fact is that at the end of the day, we are in the check delivery business. This pension system is the 26th largest pool of public money in the world. As a matter of fact, Mary, just by itself, it is four times larger than the state budget. And the amount of benefit that we send out every 30 days is over $540 million. And so if you multiply that times 12, it's very easy to calculate that the amount of money that we send out of the pension plan every year exceeds the state debt, to put this in some context.
So how's that going?
Well, it's going extremely well. And, you know, you start off your show about the state treasurer's office. You know, a lot of people have asked me, do I sign the $1 bill? And because that's where they most often see the word treasurer, is on money. Mm-hmm. And as I was stating earlier, we don't sign the $1 bill. We manage the 26th largest pool of them in the world. And as far as the pension plan itself, specific to your question, it's going great. The pension plan just crossed $108 billion. It's never had as much money in it as it does today. That is billions above what it was valued at on St. Patrick's Day of this year. And that's after paying out billions of benefits since March. Moody's, which to me is a rating agency, would be equivalent to you, Mary, or your listeners as a credit score, or to a restaurant, it'd be a sanitation grade. Moody's stress tested our pension plan last fall before any of us have ever heard of COVID, and said that this pension plan was number one in the country in terms of its ability to stay funded during economic volatility. And just imagine what type of economic volatility we've had since St. Patrick's Day of this very year. So with all the angst and anxiety that teachers and troopers and other public servants are facing in this environment, the safety and the security of the North Carolina pension system is not and should not be one of those.
Well, that is good news. Good news for the employees and good news for me as a taxpayer, because I used to live in Illinois and they had all kinds of pension problems, but we'll save that for another broadcast. But it's good to know that the job is being done. Now, you also handled the state health plan. Tell us about that.
Well, the state health plan has 720,000 participants in it. And if you're viewers want to put that in some kind of context, that is almost equal to the number of people in the United States who work for Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, J.P. Morgan Bank, and Jeff Bezos' Amazon. That's the buying power and the size of the state health plan. And you mentioned Illinois a moment ago, and it's so interesting that you did that, because our pension plan is one of the best funded in the United States, if not the world. But our state health plan is one of the most unfunded or insolvent plans in the United States, actually right behind Illinois. Mm. So it may be a little bit confusing to your viewers why the treasurer could be talking about one doing so well and one doing so poorly. And the answer to this is not emotional or political, it's mathematical. For 50 years, money has been put in the pension plan every 30 days by the employee, by the employer, and then that money earns capital gains, and that's how you get the pension plan. Well, we have the same obligation for people to be eligible for lifetime health care, those that taught, those that protected, and those that otherwise served. And as we've done that, that obligation has been building, but there's been no money set aside for that purpose. And that's why the state health plan is one of the most unfunded in the United States, behind the state of Illinois.
So what the heck can the treasurer do about that?
Well, in some respects, it's like an ant eating a ham biscuit, and, you know, it happens one bite at a time. In other respects...
I like that analogy.
Yeah. And in other respects, it's like a big chunk that we just were successful. We just negotiated our Medicare Advantage contract. We are required by law to put this contract out for bid every few years. And when it came back, we negotiated our Medicare Advantage contract. These are for our retirees over the age of 65, and the cost to them for the basic plan is zero. The cost to the dependent of the member is $4 a month, and the cost to the taxpayer is zero. That one contract is already in the oven and is going to save $1 billion.
Woo-hoo.
over five years. And we're taking all those savings and not spending it on something else. We're putting it all in the trust fund for the healthcare system so that we have a secure state health plan for not just this generation, but the next generation of public service workers. And let me tell you, I got a call yesterday after I left my yoga class from a person down in Harnett County who was helping her mother with the Medicare enrollment. She's a retired teacher. They calculated that the contract that we just negotiated is going to save her mother, who's on fixed income, $3,000 a year. And that's going to be enough to pay her property tax and all of her utilities for a whole year, just the savings on this Medicare Advantage program.
That is wonderful. This sounds like common sense government instead of what a lot of places are used to. Now, it's something else that I found was impressive. Let me intro it, but it's the unclaimed property division. So for folks who might not be familiar with this, when an apparent owner fails to communicate interest in a property for a period of time, typically 1 to 5 years, and that can be in the form of bank accounts, insurance policy proceeds, stocks, bonds, and other sources, it's considered unclaimed property. And Dale's department is responsible for returning said properties to the rightful owner. Now here's the stat that I even fact-checked this because I was like, this can't be right. This is just too much. But $8 million has been returned from July 1st through August 31st, 2020. That's within a two-month period. How the heck did you do that?
Well, that's one of the funnest parts of being the state treasurer. All told, Mary, we managed $200 billion, which is 8 times the size of the state budget. But one of these divisions, and I'm so glad you brought it up, is the unclaimed property division. The official word is the escheats division, but I used to stutter, and I'm advised not to use the word escheats too often in a sentence because it could come out incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're going to call it NC Cash. And NC Cash, as you said, if people are – think it's a little bit of a gimmick. You know, why do I have money in NC Cash? It's the last paycheck never got delivered to you, a rent deposit that you were due, a bank account somebody opened up for you. Or, Mary, last year we returned $600,000 to one individual who was the beneficiary of a life insurance policy, but no one had ever told her.
Mm-hmm.
And your odds are much better than playing the lottery. We have over 12 million records of things that belong to people and only 10 million citizens. My vocation and my background is as a motorcycle mechanic and a garbage collector, and So when I'm in Winston-Salem on Saturdays, I go and volunteer at the motorcycle shop I used to work at. Two Saturdays ago, I was standing at the reception area, and two family members of the receptionist came in and a veterinarian from that community. Three of the five adults standing there had something at nccash.com. So it's just another valuable reason why people should listen to your podcast and get the 411.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, we're almost out of time, but two things I want to just still touch on. Can you give us a brief on, you do the state and local government finance division and financial operations division?
Well, financial operations division means that we're the state banker. So if you rent a canoe or if you pay a tuition payment, eventually all of that money comes back through the treasurer's office through the financial operations division. And it's another $70 billion on that's included in the $200 billion I've already mentioned. So as it relates to me saying that we're in the check delivery business, they're the ones that actually cut the checks. And so it's very, very vital. And the state and local government finance division was created after the bankruptcy of Asheville and the Depression. And it was set up by the General Assembly as a filter for nearly 1,300 entities, 100 counties, 540 cities, water and sewer districts, airport authorities, universities, hospitals, for example. If they want to borrow money on a tax-free basis, they have to come through the LGC in order to get approval. And it's a very important function right now, especially because of where my fears are. My fears are for rural North Carolina as they try to flatten the curve on COVID economically. And all of those entities in rural North Carolina and urban North Carolina have to report through the LGC, and that's why we're working so hard. And I enjoy working so hard with the state auditor to figure out how we really help these communities who are struggling to flatten the economic curve and the challenges that are facing them.
Wow, you sure provided a lot of insight into your job. It's a big one for sure. And again, my intent here is to show folks it's not about Republican or Democrat. It's about the right person in the position. So thanks for sharing that. And to close, in 1 minute or less, and without judgment of the other candidate, what makes you the right person, Dale, to be the North Carolina State Treasurer?
Well, I'll just keep my remarks to my official duties and say that nobody calls the treasurer's office to book a cruise. They call because they've had a life-changing event. They've gotten a job. They've retired from a job. They've gotten married. They've lost a spouse. They've gotten divorced. They've had children. Their children have aged out of the state health plan. People only call us for a life-changing event, and as keepers of the public purse, we take that responsibility very seriously. And people can find out more about all of these programs by going to nctreasurer.com. And what delights us every day, we're no sunglass people. We get here, the sun's not up, and we leave, the sun's already down, is that we have an opportunity to go to work every day and to be fair and just. And we don't pick and choose which laws to apply or who to apply them to, whether it's the custodian or the chief of police.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
I hope this has been informative for our voters. Please note, Triangle 411 does not endorse candidates, but we do thank Beth and Dale for insights into their roles. Now it's time for our nonprofit spotlight. Healing Transitions, a Place for Recovery, offers hope to individuals battling substance use issues. They do it through a program that includes on-demand shelter and non-medical detox services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Their long-term recovery program even incorporates family services. Healing Transitions has a men's and women's campus, and 76% of their clients remain substance-free after a year. That's wonderful. For more info or to get involved, please visit healing-transitions.org. That's healing-transitions.org. Well, it's time to high five and say goodbye. Along with all the other podcast platforms out there, Triangle 411 has made it onto Pandora and Amazon Music. So all you need to do is say, Alexa, play podcast Triangle 411, and you will be able to hear what a Victorian house has to say, tips for becoming happy, and how Survivor Corps is working to eradicate COVID-19. I'm Mary Innsbrucker for Triangle 411. Today, dot, 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 vote early.